Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
Hello, dear friends. I'm your head mister, Lord Stefan Gearhart.
And I am your co-mister, the man with no name, Lance Wayne.
And together we are the Misters of the Misters of the Dark! Don't shut up! Ugh, whatever. Join us wherever you stream your favorite podcasts, or go to mistersofthedark.com, where we'll be discussing all things horror, from films and books to everything in betweensies. We also have the occasional victim. I mean, guest.
Only on the Fearscape Media Network.
Shut up, Lance! Oh, I always get the last laugh. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another fantastic episode of The Convergence Enigma with Josh and Stefan. This is Stefan, your host for the evening, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Josh Rutledge. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic.
And for those of you on YouTube, you can see we have a very special guest for the evening tonight. And those listening, I'm going to introduce, we have the Debs Shakti, professional quantum hypnotherapist and open channel, recently seen on the documentary Alien Abduction Answers, which you guys know we love. We just had John Yost on the show. Debs, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Stefan. It's my honor to be here and my great delight, and especially to follow John's interview. That's really fun. So,
yeah, well, you get to say the things that he couldn't, I guess.
Yeah. What I'm going to do, I'm going to kick this off right off the bat, Debs.
Okay, good.
And we talked a little bit about this with John, but I really want to hit it with you because I had not heard this term until I saw the documentary, but quantum hypnotherapy. Could you give us just a little snippet of what that is, how you got into it, and how is it different than regular hypnotherapy?
Okay, well, I started out in regular, what you would call clinical hypnosis, hypnotherapy, a bazillion years ago. And through my work at the clinical psychology PhD program at the local university. But I had been interested in it far longer than that. It was I got into it by being a yogi and meditating at a very young age, and I realized that these things have overlap. Like there is a brainwave state basically that you get into. So I kind of fell into that job, and it was really interesting because I got to learn from some of the best people on the planet at the time in that field. And so I learned the ropes of conventional hypnosis, what you are probably most people are recognize as the therapy, where you get a person into a relaxed state and then regress them back to a certain point in their life and ask them questions, because the brain or the consciousness, I should say, records everything that you experience as a human being, even the things you don't notice. For instance, you could be in a terrible car accident and it's a hit and run accident, and that person leaves and you can't remember anything about it when the police ask you about it. But if you go into even conventional hypnosis, if you get into that right brainwave state, you can tap into your memory and pull up the license plate of that car if you saw it at all, even a glance. So it's a really great therapy. But quantum hypnotherapy came about because I have, you know, I came into the world with psi gifts. You know, I'm psychic, I'm telepathic, I can remote view, I can work with energy, see energy, manipulate energy. So a lot of those things, and healing work with those things, a lot of those things are not allowed in a conventional hypnotherapy session, or right. At least back in the late 70s, they weren't. And so I kind of had to make a choice, because I felt like that was not serving the client well to not be able to bring the whole, you know, the comprehensive package into that session. So to explain how that is, for me, heads and tails above clinical hypnotherapy, we go not just into the childhood or past experience of this life. We can go into any lives, and quantum science teaches us, or says, at least postulates with some pretty good evidence, that we are, that the universe is infinite, that there are infinite versions of our galaxy, of our solar system, of our Earth even, and on each one of those there are infinite versions of ourselves. Some are very similar to the one that we are right here, that we're looking at, that we're focused on, and many or most have nothing alike.
So it differs itself from, say, like past life regression by multiversing.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, it's multi universal. It also is infinite dimensional, you know, because we all live in these varying realities. They're just in different frequencies. It's like tuning your radio dial to a certain frequency. And so that's what this process does. And to get a person into the proper brainwave state to be able to access any point in that non-local conscious reality that is the multiverse, I call it the infiniverse.
Oh, I like that.
I use a lot of the ancient yogic techniques and some very modern techniques to get a person into at least the theta brainwave state, where you can really access, you know, cosmic mind, basically.
Right.
And sometimes we get into a mixed state of theta and gamma. And gamma is where you really have all this inspiration and revelation and creativity. So it can be used for many things, but it is really, really good for accessing information from these other realities that we may not even realize we have, and also for memories that are really, really tightly squeezed into a vault of amnesia in the, you know, even from the present, which is what we did with John Yost in the movie.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, one of the things that I know, it's really weird. I recently moved to Arizona. I've been here like 3 months or so. Mm-hmm. And about 3 weeks after arriving here, which I don't know why I always like saying things in threes, but anyways, about 3 weeks after arriving here, I'd gone out to dinner with my family. We were headed back, and I had like a weird little, I don't know, it's like a panic attack almost, because things seemed out of place. Like, I remember buildings being different places than what they were. I remember like people being different places. And so over the next probably 4 or 5 nights, I had dreams of like other times that my wife and I had attempted to move to Arizona, and for whatever reason, we stopped. And this time, we were successful. And then going forward then from that point, the amount of dreams that I've had are what seem like other versions of this timeline, if you will, have decreased. Almost like I hit a convergence point, for lack of another word, where all these little multiverses were kind of coming together. And then once I got past that point, now that I'm like, you know, everything are kind of starting to branch apart again or end or whatever the case may be. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? I love that term convergence point because quantum physics also tells us that everything is enmeshed. Everything is connected. Everything is interacting with everything else and informing everything else. So when you have a point where two of these realities or more are coming together because there is a frequency match, there is a resonant frequency, that's when you have all of this kind of confusing, you know, but actually very exciting if you're, you know, an explorer like I am, experience where you are able to perceive other types of beings, other types of civilizations. You might realize that you're not limited to this tiny little human spacesuit that we're wearing, and maybe you can fly at will. You know, there's all kinds of things that happen at that point. And we access those points very easily with this method. I want to go back just a second because, Stefan, you asked, you know, what makes it different to get people in that brainwave state. When people come to me for this therapy, I give them some homework that they have to do before the session. Mm-hmm. And the earlier, the better. But it's different types of breath work, mm-hmm. and sound technology, making sound, a sound or certain sounds with mm-hmm. your voice to bring and a little bit of movement and some meditation to bring about a coherence in all of your cells, in your cellular physical body, vibrating everything at the same frequency. And when you do that, and then you do a certain technique where you are pressurizing the energy in your body to get it to go up and start to vibrate the little tiny crystals that are very significant in the pineal gland here at the top of the brain. I know this sounds wacky, but it's been proven to be true by neuroscientists. When you do this process, these crystals start to vibrate all at the same time, become coherent, and then you've turned yourself into a giant satellite dish, basically, a radio antenna. And then you can access that information from anywhere.
I recently listened to a book. I'm going to butcher his name. Joe Dispenza.
Yeah. He's one of the leaders of this movement. Yeah.
And it really talks about, like, you know, I listened to the entire book to get to the very end where he tells you, like, how to do this great exercise.
Yeah. That's why I just read actual books, Josh, because I can just flip to the page.
You don't know where.
And you can write notes and circle all the important parts, which is what I love to do.
I have all the physical books, but it's easier for me to listen to audiobooks. But,
I do both. Yeah, I like them.
For the same reason. Like, I listen to the audiobook, but then I notate where it is and I go and find it in the physical book and write it down.
But if you're familiar with Joe Dispenza's work, you kind of get an idea of what we're doing. We don't do the same exact process, but it is very similar because there are different sequences for different things, you know.
Right. Yeah. I tried the dragon breath, I believe is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone with a deviated septum, I found it very difficult to do.
Right. And I do get clients who cannot perform that well, or they can't perform what we call alternate nostril breathing. Mm-hmm. And so what I've found, though, is if you can get them to breathe in sync with you, and deeply and at the pace that you need to go, even through the mouth, and use the mind to envision that you're doing it through the nose, it still works.
Trickier.
What I found was interesting when Josh, when you were explaining those breathing techniques to me and stuff like that, how much they reminded me of what Santosh has taught me. Our friend Santosh is a yogi, and how much rooted in ancient yoga some of those breathing techniques are that he does
all,
for his
daily
practice.
They're all rooted in yoga. I postulate almost everything that we have as physical science that goes beyond regular physical fitness are rooted in yoga.
I would say he would agree with that as well.
But I'm a little bit skewed. I think I love him already. That sounds
good. Oh yeah, you guys would get along fantastic.
So I was curious, you know, so you helped John think, kind of process through and solve a question that he's had for many, many years that he had, you know, kind of pushed away and finally decided to address. And, you know, when we had him on, he even talked about that. That's what the film really was for him, was the exploration of that question.
And I loved that, because he said it wasn't even a recreation. It was actually happening there. And I was like, whoa, that made it even cooler.
That is real, raw, unedited footage. Yeah. But what's
so brave.
What's really tough, though, is that, you know, I think the full film credits included is 92 minutes, and his session lasted 6 hours.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I would love to get
popcorn and watch every bit of that.
You would not believe the content that has not been revealed yet.
Yeah, he talked to us about that. He said, wait till the next one.
Yeah, he said he's working on
a trilogy.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Holy Trinity.
It is. It's just call me Trinity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we talked about it with John, and I think in the film what we saw, you spoke about, you know, like you were talking to John, and then all of a sudden you said, I would like to talk to John's higher self.
Yes.
So I gather, you know, we all kind of have that higher self.
Yeah.
Is that the more spiritual part of us that doesn't inhabit this body, or is it something else, or any thoughts on what that is, or what that higher self is?
Yes, yes, and yes to all those questions.
And good night, folks.
Yeah.
And good night. That's it. Mic drop. The higher self for me, let's just look at the human species for one thing. You know, just think of all of us grouped together in a big group on this planet. And as you move up in frequency, and meet these other versions of yourselves, I call them quantum twins. As you meet them, you start to realize the higher up that you go in frequency, the more evolved they are, the more enlightened they are. And it's almost like an inverted funnel. Like, here's humanity, and then suddenly you're moving up in frequency, and it starts to compress. It's because you start to have coherent frequencies with these other people who are also part of you.
Yeah.
They're all you. And so the higher up in frequency you go, the more the funnel starts to compress until you get to a singularity at the top. If you just to use, you know, direction, let's say the top is the singularity, or what you would call source, or what some people call God, or the divine, or the cosmic mind, or the big kahuna, or whatever you want to call it. That is, all of this is you, but that higher self is kind of the one that holds all of the knowledge in one place. It's like some people call it the Akashic Record. So,
right.
The higher self, in John's case, it was just, you know, it was that form of him that was very authoritative but super wise, and was able to speak out what he needed to hear in such a way that he could accept it. And that's what I love about this therapy, because, you know, you guys probably know this, I channel all the time. I channel beings, and often I channel a group called the Star Teachers, who are, again, more highly evolved versions of us. They say they're us from the future, if you will, because there is no future, but it's all happening at once forever. But so I can sit there and talk to John and channel what information he needed, and it's going to be the same. However, it's much more effective to hear it coming out of your own freaking mouth.
Yeah.
When you didn't expect any of that information, you don't have any conceptualization of what that information would be. So that's the power of this therapy, is that, you know, we record this, and often people think they remember what they said during it, but it's only a snippet. It's like a dream that starts to weave its way off as you wake up, right? But when you see that recording and you hear yourself speaking all of this intelligence and stuff that you have no idea that you knew, it's kind of undeniable that it's probably the truth.
So something that I struggle with a lot, and honestly, my wife struggles with when I tell her the things that I have happened to me, is she says, well, you have a really active imagination. How do you know you're not just making this stuff up?
Okay.
This is what she's talking to me, and this is my own thought, you know, when I'm thinking about it. So, you know, like the poster says, I want to believe, and I've come a long way in that believing mechanism, if you will. But that doubt in the back of my mind is that I have an active imagination, and what if I'm just making this stuff up?
And again, the answer is yes, you do. And that's why you should trust it. Because if you can imagine something, Josh, you've already created it on one of those frequencies or many of those frequencies. Really, all you're doing when you engage your imagination is you're tuning into one of those frequencies and drawing in information that's pertinent to what it is you want to do or learn or solve. So if you feel like you have a really active imagination, I say awesome, because half the battle is fought already.
Yeah.
And it's all true. I don't care if you think you can imagine the scariest, most awful monster that sci-fi has never been able to depict in a movie. If you have imagined that, you created it because you're the creator. That's a little secret. You created it, or at least you are able to pull that information to know that that is out there somewhere. And likewise, you know, angels, fairies, other dimensional civilizations that only you can see in your mind. That's why we have a creative mind. It is our tuning apparatus, basically.
Well, you know, I've thought about for a long time that, you know, like the fairy world or the elf world or other things that that we don't see on a regular basis. But you look back in literature and the way that they were talked about in past, you know, the 1600s and before. If for some reason we've closed ourselves off as humanity to be able to see and interact with these realms, whereas a previous version of ourselves, you know, were more open to it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. And what's really cool is, and what we're hoping to, maybe I'm giving away too much here, but what we're hoping to show people is that, or postulate for people as a thought puzzle, is all of these things, ghosts, spirits, demons, ETs, fairies, dragons, all of that are just different versions of the same consciousness, just like we are. And so what's interesting, you know, Whitley Strieber, who's in our film, thank you so much, Whitley, for being there and being such a big part of the film, Whitley Strieber, and one of my great teachers that I love, Graham Hancock, who has written many books about lost civilizations and ETs, kind of the ancient astronaut theory kind of stuff. He's a great guy, and in one of his books called Visionary, he brings this up in great depth. He's a huge scholar, so there's probably 300 pages on just how ancient people believed in, you know, the gods, or medieval people believed in fairies or elves or gnomes and all of this. And really what we now are starting to see is that they're all the same thing, but they're being translated by virtue of what you have in your surrounding, in your culture, yeah, your that time, you know? So it's just different labels for kind of the same thing, right?
And when you think about that, that kind of thought process, that they are all maybe the same thing appearing to us as different realities, mm-hmm. It seems interesting that there was a spike in saucer-shaped craft after the Day the Earth Stood Still and movies like it were released on film. And it's almost like our consciousness said, this is now the form, you know, you chose the form of the destroyer.
Yep. Exactly. Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
There is only two.
Right. And something else I was thinking about that I learned too is I'm pagan myself, Wiccan, and you know, I believe in the power of the moon. And something interesting I learned years ago was how every year the moon moves further and further away from the Earth. And I thought, gosh, think about 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago or three, how powerful the moon was, and how people, you know, we talk about why isn't there magic like there was in the old stories and things like that. And maybe there was, maybe the
frequency is different.
Yeah. The frequency is different. The gravity is different. Tides are different. Everything is different because the moon was so much closer.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it affects, we're made up mostly of water in our cells. It affects the ocean. How can we not agree that it affects the water in our cells?
You know,
if it was closer, it was definitely affecting the vibrational frequency of our cells.
And imagine the light it projected at night.
Oh, and can you imagine how big it looked?
How big? You know,
I think about that. Yeah.
What did they see on the surface if it was so much closer?
Well, it wouldn't have had nearly the craters that it has today. That's
also true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But one of the things that, you know, also to make another Ghostbusters reference, and since you brought up water, in Ghostbusters 2, you remember they collect some slime and they start doing experiments with it, and it starts reacting like when they play rock and roll, it reacts poorly. When they play classical or upbeat music, it reacts, you know, well.
Yeah, they're doing the Dr. Emoto stuff on it.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
Ray, you're not sleeping with it, are you?
Always Ray.
Always Ray.
So, but you know, but thinking along the same line, I mean, that's right. The water senses emotion and reacts to things. And to your point, we're made up of water. The earth is made up of water. And it just really makes me wonder if, you know, that's maybe the, I don't know when that film from Emoto came out, but maybe there was some cross-pollination, if you will, of ideas between what the movie was presenting versus what thoughts were.
Right. His book came out just about the same time. So I imagine, or, you know, a year or two before, but he'd been doing research on it for several
decades.
Yeah,
my first experience was What the Bleep Do We Know? That's where I first saw him.
Big gateway.
I've been trying to get Josh to watch it.
Dude, you need to watch it. It's, you know, it's a little dated, and but it is the gateway drug to this information that we're talking about. It truly is. But they were definitely taking a page from Dr. Emoto's book in that movie. And that's what I love. You know, we have, again, it proves to me how connected we all are in consciousness. There is a consciousness grid around this planet. You can't see it, but I'm not saying we're a hive mind because we're all individuated, but we are all connected to this network. And so, you know, when someone like Dr. Emoto writes this book, it's a little popular and everything, but suddenly everyone is talking about how water is affected by energy. When one person sees a flying saucer, everybody starts seeing a flying saucer, that kind of thing. So it's not just because everybody wants to be like everybody, you know, be the cool kids club. It's because it's really happening. It's like the 100th monkey theory, if you're familiar with that, where they taught a few monkeys how to wash bananas before they ate them on a little secluded island. And after a while, even the baby monkeys who were being born on that island who had never eaten bananas, the first time they were given a banana, they went to the river and washed the banana. But even more importantly, monkeys on other islands all over the world started washing their bananas. Mm. So there's this critical mass. There's a formula, and it's called the 100th monkey formula. But when a certain amount of people, animals, whatever, beings learn something new or discover something, have a revelation, if more than one, I think it's 0.01% of 1%. I may be wrong because I've been up a long time today, but it's either 1% or 0.1% of the whole population of the species learns this thing, then suddenly they all know it. It's like osmosis. It just happens. So
I feel like it's probably 1%. And the reason I say that is because that is seems to be Dr. Stephen Greer's new thing that
it is.
Starting a couple of years ago, is he wants to get 1% of the population meditating.
To meditate, right.
Because that'll raise the entire population. Yeah.
It will. It will. And so actually the Star Teachers said we did hit that critical point about 2 years ago. And that's why you're seeing so much accelerating now. What people don't understand is when something accelerates in our species, in our culture, on our planet, everything accelerates. It's not just one thing. So they're saying, well, if we're becoming enlightened here really quickly, then why is there so much war and strife and greed and all that? And it's because it's all accelerating. But what's good about that is it's so much more, it's so in your face that it cannot be denied anymore. And so it behooves us to take care of it so that we can keep moving forward. But yeah.
So if we're kind of barreling towards enlightenment, right? And, it's something I think Einstein said, when your technology outgrows your humanity, you're, doomed for failure. It's a paraphrase, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I've also heard someone say recently that, the next evolutionary step for humanity is a spiritual evolution and not necessarily a physical evolution. Yes. So it sounds like we're heading in that direction. Mm-hmm. Part of me is excited to see where that takes us. But part of me also knows that so many of these things throughout history have taken a long time.
Of course. And
so,
relatively speaking.
Right. Right. Exactly. But it makes me also like nervous or sad that I won't actually see any of these changes in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. But will my kids see them or will their kids see them? Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting to think about.
I have it on pretty good authority that you are going to see it. They say this incarnation, this particular point in the human development species in this particular frequency is the one where we kind of jump over the threshold. And not everybody does, because some people aren't finished with this particular experiment here, this little science lab. So some of them will stay behind and still experience what happens if we do start a nuclear war or whatever, but it's not for the greatest part anyway. They're saying, or we're saying to ourselves, no, you're just going to focus on a higher frequency. And it's not, and that's the thing I want to say too, is that we don't actually move into other frequencies. We merely train our focus to another frequency. They're all happening all at once, forever, all the time. And I tell people it's like being in a giant coliseum full of monitors that are attached to DVD players, and each one is playing a different movie. Some are very similar, but they're all different, and they're all on pause except for one. And the one that's not on pause is the reality that you're focused on right now.
Mm-hmm.
doesn't mean those other realities don't exist. It just means they're on pause, i.e. they are a probability to, in quantum physics speak. So let's say you just decide, I really don't like this movie that much, and I think I want to explore something else. So you look at this one way over here in the top right-hand corner of the Coliseum. You just hit the remote control, hit pause on this one, you hit play on that one. Suddenly, this reality becomes probability. It doesn't mean that everybody in that movie, i.e. that life, that reality, died or evaporated or don't exist anymore. They are just existing in their own realm, but your focus is over here, so it is irrelevant to you at this point. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah.
So if I can shift gears a little bit. So what are your thoughts on ley lines and how they fit into how we experience things?
Sure. Ley lines, to me, are the nervous system of the planet. Okay. And what we're also now starting to theorize and maybe even make discoveries about is that there are cosmic ley lines, too. So, you know, everything is a fractal of the great hologram of creation. So you can look at, you know, the veins on a leaf and look at a picture of your own nervous system, and it looks the same. Mm-hmm. If you were to be able to photograph the ley lines of the planet from outer space, it would look probably a lot like that. It also might look, which also looks like the mycelium network under the soil that covers the whole planet. That's the planet's physical internet. You know, before we invented the internet, the plants and the soil on our planet have lived for eons, probably since the beginning of the planet, with that internet. It's a World Wide Web. But the ley lines are also like old-fashioned telegraph lines. They are a carrier wave for information and energy. So, you know, one of my big bucket list things in my life, which I haven't done yet, but I promise I'm going to do it, is to walk the Camino de Santiago. And I don't know if you know what that is, but it's like a hunt for hundreds of years. There's been a pilgrimage path from France, Saint-Jean-Pierre-de-Port in France, over the Pyrenees Mountains and all the way across Spain to this cathedral at the edge of Spain called the Cathedral of St. James, which, you know, for Catholics, it holds supposedly holds the bones of St. James. That's where he was finally interred. Well, so for hundreds of years, Catholics did this, you know. But what we found is that for hundreds, maybe thousands of years, other civilizations walked that same path for spiritual reasons, and it is because there are specific, really powerful ley lines that go, if you look at that path, and there have been energy workers, there have been people literally measuring the frequency of energy along that path. And it's 500 kilometers, by the way. So it's pronounced along that trail. It's off the charts. The Schumann resonance is of the Earth is much higher on that path. So people have always walked that trail because they're receiving downloads, or they're getting energy, or they're becoming healed, or they're having revelations. But again, just like translating what other beings are from what you know, like fairies or ghosts or whatever, the ley line, the path, gets translated by whatever culture you come from. So I just want to go and experience. I want to feel the energy of that path.
Yeah.
And I just want to walk a 500-kilometer thing and say I did it over the Great Pyramids.
You did it,
so,
right.
Yeah.
I have a similar one, which is that Buddhist temple that's on top of the mountain. It's like the temple of 1,000 steps or whatever.
Yes.
I can't remember the exact name of it, but that's on my bucket list to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. there are many megalithic sites I'd love to go see, or very highly spiritual or metaphysical sites I'd love to see.
Oh, Machu Picchu for sure.
Oh, yeah. Golly. Let's go right now.
Yeah, let's take a helicopter in. That'd be fun. Yeah.
Which, by the way, is a site. It's one of the biggest UFO hotspots in the world, is Peru, especially around Machu Picchu. So,
well, I mean, there's all the that's where all the glyphs that are in the desert and stuff in Peru.
Yeah,
and
the Nazca lines.
The Nazca lines. Yeah.
A question I was going to ask you earlier is about dreams, and awesome. About whether or not they are reflections of the Infiniverse, because it's odd that, because I was talking about this today, so of course there's our synchronicity for the day.
Yeah,
I'm sharing this story about how years ago I had a dream that lasted a year. It was overnight, but my dream lasted a year. It was I lived a year in a night. I remember going to sleep, waking up, eating breakfast, going to school. I met this girl, had an entire relationship. It went all the way through my graduation in high school, and she broke up with me the day of graduation.
Oh, my family was in
it. I mean, it was this whole thing, and the very next day was when it was done, and it was exactly a year, and I woke up, and I woke up feeling this was another life of mine.
Yes. Okay.
Like, fully.
Well, you're absolutely correct as far as I'm concerned. You literally, when we go to sleep, we're not analyzing physical data. You know, we're not analyzing all the stimuli that's here in this construct that used to we call third dimensional Earth life. When you go to sleep, or when you become a lucid dreamer or an astral traveler, a person who can do out-of-body travel, remote view, all of those things, what you're doing is you're slipping out, you're taking off the spacesuit. It's still on autopilot, it's still working, but your consciousness is traveling and looking at other of your realities. And it's significant that you bring that one up, because I call that compressed time. And I've experienced that. I've actually experienced that in the waking state here, in the physical state. But compressed time is very significant proof that you traveled to one of your other realities and lived there. Again, this one got put on pause. It was a probability while your body was sleeping. And the time difference is part of the theory of relativity. That's all there is to it. You know, you traveled at the speed, not at the speed of life, Stefan, but the speed of consciousness.
Yeah. I mean, I remember having dreams and everything. Like, it was.
I have no doubt.
It was
That's
insane.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Congratulations. That's really cool.
Yep, it's something I've hung on to for many years, like, just thinking about that.
And that's the other thing. When you have a dream that never goes away, that just keeps niggling at you, that's, I call that a love letter from your higher self to your physical conscious mind, that there's information to be had, that there's something pertinent that needs to be explored. So, you know, you can either journal about it, you can teach yourself lucid dreaming and go back into it and see what else is there, or you can do quantum hypnosis and try it out. So, you know.
You know, we were talking about earlier about fairies and things, and, you know, they kind of exist, and we experience them differently. I was thinking a little bit about, like, Sasquatch, Bigfoot, things like that. You know, if you kind of take that same thought line around the Infiniverse and kind of carry it forward, maybe Bigfoot is just from a one of the universes that you know, we didn't, this form of humanity didn't evolve. Instead, the Bigfoot form of humanity evolved, and we just get occasional bleed through, if you will, from those other places.
Yeah. And that's the term I like to use, is bleed through. It's absolutely, again, this is just me, but I feel it is absolutely correct. And if you've ever encountered a Sasquatch being, you know that they are interdimensional. We're all interdimensional, but they are volitionally interdimensional. That's why they're so hard to find, because, you know, they're right here in your face, but they're in a different frequency. You have to match the frequency to be able to perceive them. But the I do believe they are a different, very closely related form of the human being. Just a different branch.
Yeah. Something I was thinking about the other day, I was talking to my kids about salmon. And we were telling them, you know, that every year they swim back to the same spot they were hatched to reproduce. Mm-hmm. And it really got me thinking, if what if there are beings that dimensionally travel to our plane for some reason like that? Like there's either for procreation or for ritual or for, you know, ceremony or whatever the case may be. And so there are periods of time where we see more, we have more experiences because those are around times that, for whatever reason, they're traveling more to our plane of existence for some reason.
Well, maybe because all of the variables are in perfect alignment for that. You know, like, you know, you live by the moon, Stefan, so you know that there are certain times of the year, even certain times of the month.
Yeah, I was going to say when the veil is thin, too.
When the veil is thin, and you literally have an easier way to connect, or when there's more magic power, you know, if you want to call that technology magic. In fact, all technology is considered magic until it becomes the culture's technology,
you know.
But, yeah, I agree with you 100% on that. I really do. Very thoughtful. Yeah.
You're a good boy, Josh.
Oh, thank you.
Good boy. Good boy.
Oh, my leg's bouncing. Hold on.
That's called the blibula, by the way. You know, when you scratch a dog and it does that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's its blibula.
Blibula.
There's actually a term for that, the blibula.
Interesting.
One of the weird little pieces of trivia that floats around my head for no reason.
Oh, we all have it. Yeah. I think we've got the perfect pub trivia team then right here.
I'm ready.
Also, just, you know, in one of the universes, there's Blobula, where Blob is Dracula. They're the same.
Wow. Oh, that would be an interesting sci-fi movie, actually.
You would just
think about that.
You would just take the whole person in, suck out their blood and spin them back out.
That's pretty much what the Blob already does.
That's what the Blob does, but, you know, but with a better accent and better clothing. Yeah.
So, where, how would he
got a good aristocratic Southern Georgian accent?
Right. Yes.
Where would he keep his cape? I don't know. Like,
that would be something to think about. I don't know.
So, I just wanted to jump in one more time and talk a little bit about ley lines, because I recently found out that I live a mile from a ley line that passes through my area.
Oh, yes.
And in the process of looking, I found that Stefan also lives close to a ley line. And it also, I find it interesting that I had my kind of, multiverse panic attack, if you will, near my house, which is, again, really close to a ley line. So just wonder if there's a reason why there's just an uptick in activity that happens at my house, that happens to us, and, you know, if it's any correspondence with being, you know, or any correlation with being next to a ley line, so close to a ley line. So
I believe it can be. I think it can be an amplifier for whatever is going on in your life anyway. Just like, you know, people go to special places that are considered a vortex. That's an amplified energy place. I believe ley lines are also. But it's like getting close to an electrical wire. You know, you can burn yourself out, or you can use it if you are properly grounded, and it is. You can use it to do some really cool things. So, you know, what's interesting is that they've always been here, and they're always have been very powerful. But again, we haven't, for the most part, perceived them, other than the few who are a little bit more elevated in their progress until now. But again, that 100th monkey effect is taking hold. So humanity is starting to perceive more. Even the ones who you might think aren't that awake, they're just awake enough to see stuff all the time. They're like confused. So that's another part of the work that I do, is I do counseling for ET experience, contact experiences, and paranormal experiences, or just the stuff you can't understand.
Right.
Can bring it into a context where a person can at least grasp the ideology of it and make sense of it for their own life, you know, and do their own self-inquiry afterwards. Right. So, but I truly believe that's, you know, there's no mistake that you moved where you moved. You literally drew yourself to that place. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, and like I said, it's an uptick in activity for me. You know, you talked about people kind of awakening to it. You know, my wife, she was just kind of opening up before we moved, but since we moved, she's really started opening up to it. Mm-hmm. And I find it really interesting when you think about, you know, the 100 monkey piece that you said. Maybe that's why now is the right time for quote unquote disclosure, or for the governments of the world to really kind of, you know, back that there are these things that we can't explain, because mm-hmm. humanity is finally at a place spiritually to be able to think outside of the box and maybe accept some of those things.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, there was there are all kinds of reasons why disclosure was never made and why things were covered up. Most of them were for power and greed and so forth. But there was also, there were some good reasons. And part of it was that most people really might not have been able to handle that information. They weren't, you know, it's like trying to get a kindergartner to do trig, you know?
Yeah.
Even if they're good at math at that age, there are very few humans on the planet in the kindergarten age who can understand trigonometry. They don't have the fundamental information that builds you up to learning right. how to understand it. And that's kind of where we have been. So I agree. Will the governments of the world ever go into full disclosure, honest full disclosure? That remains to be seen. My human self wants to say, oh, hell no, they're never going to do that, because it doesn't behoove them to do that. They would lose their power instantly.
Mm-hmm.
The spiritual, more higher plane focused part of me says it absolutely will happen, because that's the direction we're moving.
Right.
And including are the people who are now running things on this planet. They're not always going to be running things. Nobody's going to be running things, because eventually we're going to come into that frequency where we are harmonious and coherent, like most of the rest of the Infiniverse, by the way. This is kind of a rigid, specific construct where we decided to experiment with some of that stuff, you know. But duality and contrast and all of that. But most, at least what I've seen personally in my travels and in my communications with these other parts of myself and yourself, tell us that most of the cosmos, most of creation, does not live the way that we do here.
Yeah. And, you know, I was going to say too, I think another reason I think disclosure is a more modern thing is the rate at which information is shared now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think if this disclosure had happened back in the 1920s, you've got a newspaper article that mm-hmm. may or may not hit small towns. And this is just America,
yeah.
you know, let alone the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now
right.
it doesn't matter. You can live in rural Africa and have a satellite that gives you internet, mm-hmm. you know, and able to get, if disclosure happens on the big scale that we all hope that it happens on, imagine how fast that news spreads.
Instantaneously. Yeah, there are literally people living in cardboard shacks in like mm-hmm. you know Afghanistan who have cell phones,
yep,
because yeah. it's so important. That is more important than having running water to them.
Right.
So
information is power.
Information is power. But what we're, you know, what we've been told is that our internet and our way of interacting with each other now at the speed of light at the present moment is there. It's merely training wheels for where we're going, where we have where we always have been, but we haven't been focused on, and that is instantaneous knowing of everything between minds.
Yeah.
Right.
We had a guest on several years ago, John E.L. Tenney, that talked about the internet actually being a psychic network.
It is.
That, you know, that's not actually bits and bytes, if you will, but it's, you know, the will and the whims of the people who interact on it.
Yeah.
So
it's check it out, what it's doing right now.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, as one of my guru says, the world is in anguish and chaos because the minds of men are in anguish and chaos. Right. It reflects what is going on in the collective consciousness. But what I've been told, and again, what I've seen, like, you know, when I've traveled with our star friends, if you will, I don't like to call it abduction because it's always voluntary, I believe, but that's a whole other subject. But when I have traveled, especially as a child, to what Whitley termed the secret school, you know, where children are abducted, they go to these places and they're shown screens, and usually they're being shown what could happen to the planet and to humanity if you don't take care of it. I experienced that as a child all the time. But what I've been shown is that we do progress, and indeed they say we progress in this lifetime, those who are alive right now, to that collective focus or the major collective focus on those higher frequencies where we can literally understand each other and communicate with each other without any physical technology. Mm-hmm. We can do that now. I mean, I can do that with you guys right now, but for the most part, most human beings don't realize that they can do it yet.
Right.
But it's so close. And when that happens, you won't need a government to disclose anything because the government won't exist anymore.
Well, and we've also talked about how most belief in whatever it is really a personal experience driven thing, right? So
it is.
Even if the government were to say, yep, you know, we've been visited by aliens, here's a contract you signed with them, you know, most people wouldn't really believe it still because they haven't had their own
experience. The direct experience is the best teacher. And and actually, you know, you speak about belief, and belief is nothing more than something that you continuously agree to be focused on. Mm-hmm. It's an agreement between two or more people, and you just keep thinking the same thought over and over again. That's something that Joe Dispenza says a lot.
Right.
Talks about what belief is. Belief isn't something written in stone. It's what you. It's an agreement. That's all it is.
Right.
Yep. So. And I think that's a good place to kind of wrap things up. We're getting towards the end of our time, and I like ending on a sweet quote. So that worked out really, really well.
Cool.
But Debs, we wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of share your information or plug anything that you're wanting to plug. That way our listeners know where they can find you and interact with you.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much again. This has been delightful, and I'm sad that it's over already.
I know. But it goes quick when it's good.
It does. It absolutely does. There's that compressed time again. People can find me at my website, debshakti.com, debshakti.com. And there's a media section on there where you can access almost every thing I've ever done, video wise or audio wise, including interviews like these. Eventually this will go on there, and or a link to it. And then there are tons of free content on there about how to work with energy, dream science, remote viewing, you know, channeling, telepathic stuff, and of course a lot of the ET stuff, the interdimensional stuff. And and on the website they can find out how to schedule appointments with me. I do private appointments. I do group. I do online stuff all the time for the world. I've had online groups as large as almost 10,000 on Zoom.
Wow.
So it's been fun to have those big groups or speak at conferences or whatever. And you can get updates about the film that we have out, Alien Abduction Answers, and maybe some cool stuff coming up once we get rolling.
The Trinity we spoke
about.
We definitely have to agree. Josh and I have both been lucky enough to have sessions with you, and we highly recommend you. It was
thank you.
Phenomenal.
Thank you, guys.
You being on the show was just an honor. So thank you so much, Deb Shockey, for being on the show. So much. Thank you. You are welcome anytime.
Oh, thank you, Stefan and Josh. Thank you so much. And I do want to say, too, on the website, there's one thing I left off. I'm getting ready to do one or more retreats all over the place. And so that's a good place to check out the calendar and see where these retreats are. There are consciousness retreats, there are contact retreats, CE5 trainings, all kinds of stuff, yoga retreats, you name it.
Do
it's
it.
Going to be going. It's going to be happening. If you like it, check
come
it out.
Come do one in Arizona.
So. Yes.
come to us. I would so love to do that. I would. And perhaps we should talk about that.
We shall. Again, thank you so much. And thank you guys so much for tuning in to the Convergence Enigma with Josh and Stefan. Just a reminder, if you're listening to the podcast, you can also check out the video version on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/FearscapeMedia. And if you're watching it on YouTube and you want to listen to it while you're driving, you can go to theconvergenceenigma.com and check out the podcast version there. Thanks again. This has been Stefan saying goodbye and saying keep your eyes on the skies.
And this has been Josh. The truth is now.
And remember, folks, keep questioning, keep searching. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you.